So these are really ways of determining, you know, how strong the collective is. So there could be many avenues in which one can measure this. For example, like this example of provoking someone deliberately and seeing the responses, the, you know, questioning the people immediately around that individual, and then also using the stimulus, and also using external stimuli, like in the video you showed, the lady, the woman was, you know, crying when she was exposed to that, you know, photograph of a suffering child with a tumor. So, I mean, that child was totally unrelated biologically to that. It was not a relative or a family member, but still there was a strong empathy. So there could be many other ways in which it could be measured. So one possible experiment that could be done is that if you can, say, show the same kind of stimuli to a person whom you know that the person who is suffering, that the picture that you're showing is some a kind of a known enemy of that individual, that the someone that it's the person who the experimental subject hates, then if the image is that of this same person really suffering, then you can see, you know, how what
they
kind of response
pleasure.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's usually
But if he has a kind of empathy and compassion for this, then this is a genuine compassion. Because everybody has, almost everyone has the capacity to empathize, especially those, you know, once close ones, like family members and so on. That is a natural to us.
More attachment.
Yeah, there's an element of attachment there as well.
Not a genuine compassion. Mm-hmm. Genuine compassion should be unbiased and not much basis on their attitude towards oneself. But rather, they also, just like me, have the right to be
happy.
To be happy. And every right to overcome suffering, so on that understanding, develop sense of concern. That's compassion. So unbiased, right?
Unbiased.
So your enemy side also. As far as their attitude is concerned, they are harming or create trouble for you, so enemy. But the other side, it's still sentient being, just like myself. So when such person is passing through difficult, then sympathy or concern. That's genuine compassion.
Phil, as a social psychologist, do you have any reflections about
that? Well, just that I think those are great ideas. The provocation is something that has been done for other reasons, not for studying compassion, but there are experiments where the participants are made to be frustrated. So one of the things is that say, okay, at the end of the experiment, you get your credit by going down the hall to room 102. Then they go down to room 102, and the person's talking on the phone and pays no attention to them. So you see this, you know, rising frustration, things like that. So there are a lot of, I think it'd be possible to find the literature, easy things like that. I was mentioning to Margaret, we're working on a virtual reality measure of compassion. We just started doing this with Jim Blaskovich at UC Santa Barbara, who's a virtual reality researcher. And so we want situations that was measured different aspects of compassion. So in a virtual world, we have a rough draft of this virtual world where a blind man is walking in the street and you're in this place and he trips on the curb and drops his cane and needs help. And in these virtual experiments, there's a little antenna on the person's head. So if they move forward to help, there are cameras and stuff in the room measuring the inclination of the body and all that kind of stuff. So while we were doing this, we were thinking mostly of those, someone is injured and will you help? And it happened that they had already at Santa Barbara a shooting, like a video game of shooting, but very realistic in the sense that you can actually walk around the people who are going to be your enemies in the beginning. And to make sure they do that, they have a number on their back and a word on their front, and the subject has to be able to say what's on that person's shirt. So they have to go over and look at the person. And then the person at the end of a corridor sort of hiding behind a wall, and you have a wall that you can hide behind here too, and you have a gun in your hand that you see in this world. It's really eerie. They put it in your hand after you have this helmet on, and when you put it up like this, you see the thing in this world. So this guy is shooting at you, and you're shooting at him. If you look out like this at the moment he shoots, there's an explosion of red in this thing. It's like you got hit. And so we're thinking this thing probably could be altered in various ways that a sympathetic person would be slightly sympathetic to this other person, you know, not as likely to shoot them. Or the person could drop their gun. So then killing them would be completely unnecessary. You know, so you don't need it for self-defense anymore. So some things like that. So almost all of these things they're doable, and we are trying to do them. And we're trying to do on both sides of those, sort of a something very much like an enemy versus someone who is totally benign, worthy of help, you know, a child or a blind person. So I think we can figure it out. And certainly assessing what other people in someone's world, you know, what your students think of you, all of that has been done for other reasons, but it would be very interesting to see this. You see it clearly in organizations, like, you know, you're a good example of that too, where a huge bunch of good effects that are measurable in the world. I think you could find it in the with their family members, with their friends at work, you know, sort of an expanding group of people assessing whether this person has a generally good effect on others. And they, of course, people perceive that, whether you're, you know, basically whether your orientation toward these other people is positive or not. They're great ideas, though. I think some of them are better than things, additional things that we haven't tried.
So time is getting on, and there are two related questions that I'd like to ask as final questions, Your Holiness. And the first is that given all that you've heard this week about neuroplasticity, I wonder if your views or the views of the Geshes has in any way been influenced in terms of thinking about what mental training is actually doing. So that's the first question. And the second question is whether there were any things that were said over the course of this week that were surprising to you that seemed anomalous.
Solness was asking the monks whether they had anything to say, but you know, he was saying that on his own part, he felt that there was nothing really anomalous or just that jumped out that was kind of, you know, astonishing. But on the other hand, it really revealed the marvel of the detailedness of scientific explanation, and one very encouraging factor was that many of the ideas and his own personal conviction of the value of
that his story, da personal story, da the jidanga, da the my personal sin changes kaya mar da nothing special. No. I'm just a Buddhist monk. So I think more or less had common sort of experiences,
so
common knowledge.
So put it more inclusive language, our conviction that our conviction in the sort of the value of the compassion, loving kindness, and caring, and so on, which and the need for deliberate cultivations of these, we felt. His Holiness was saying that he felt that there were a lot more scientific evidence to suggest that these could be true, and also there are ways in which the kind of detailed mechanism of these could be understood at the biochemical level.
Then perhaps I think me personally, and my main sort of interest or main commitment is promotion of human value as a secular ethics without touching religious belief. So there, so your experiment, your finding is extremely useful.
From the monks here, they were There's an expression that what they learned in the course of this presentation, like a few days of presentation, is how the scientists have really studied very carefully and experimentally how the effect of mother-child relationship and parenting can really have an effect at the brain level, formation of the brain and the changes of the brain, and how through that personality changes of the individual can be affected. And also in the presentations, there were presentations made of specific studies of the effect of meditation, deliberate cultivation of compassion, and so on, and their correlations at the level of brain. These were studied and presented, and they were very thankful and impressed, because as far as the kind of detailed mechanics on the biological level is concerned, there is nothing that they have been exposed to in their training. He was saying that his own observation has been the following, that he has been to the science workshop in the monastery, and this is the fifth year he has been to. And over the course of this long period of time, 5 years, he felt that there was a sort of a change on the part of the scientific discipline. Initially, when he was first... That's his observation, of course.
His impression.
So he felt that at the beginning, when he was first exposed to the science, and he had discussions with the scientists, there was a sort of an equation made between brain and mind. So basically, mind is brain, and brain is mind. Now, over the course of these 5 years, his study and listening particularly to this presentation, his impression has been that there is a greater sophistication of distinctions between brain levels of activity and psychological and mental levels of activity. One observation the Venerable here had is that particularly from this set of meetings he had, was that there was a kind of a convergence at the level of motivation between the two traditions that are represented here, the scientific tradition and the Buddhist tradition. Because in the Buddhist tradition, the fundamental motivation of engaging in Buddhist practice and study really is to be of benefit to others, to help other sentient beings through the knowledge and practice. So what he found here is that there is a similar motivation on the part of the scientific enterprise as well. The ultimate motivation seemed to be really to bring about change and beneficial change in humanity, so which he was pleased.
That's